required for spreading the Bhakti Siddhanta. And what is Bhakti Siddhanta? Well, simply we can say it's the same teachings that we all know very well by the mercy of Bhakti Siddhanta, revealed through Bhaktivedanta. Bhaktivedanta and Bhakti Siddhanta, it's the same word, just a slightly different connotation. So we're receiving through the mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the mercy of, and the teachings, which are the mercy of Bhakti Siddhanta Swami Prabhupada. So all acharyas teach the same thing. But there is a specialty also in their teachings. Not everyone is not the same, and that is indeed the one of the main teachings, one of the main points to be understood, that not everyone is the same. So even though different acharyas teach the same thing, but they teach it not exactly differently, but with their, you could say, with their own personal style, imprint or focus. They preach according to, every preacher has to preach according to the prevailing circumstances. If our own Srila Prabhupada had gone among the people of America and spoken as Bhaktisiddhanta spoke, or that, if he'd spoken in English at the same level of complexity, you could say almost pedantic, or almost like overly scholarly, it could be, would be, might be considered like, but the same, I don't say the problem wasn't scholarly in his presentation, but it was definitely a lot more simple, his presentation. If he'd have spoken in the same kind of complex language, very complex, presented the concepts in a complex way, again I'm saying it's complex, it's from our point of view. It's actually very sweet and clear for those whose minds are sweet and clear. But if he'd have spoken in the same way, it wouldn't have been understood. So preachers, to some extent, they have to see who is their target audience and prepare the missile accordingly. The bomb is the same, but short-range missile, long-range missile, and missiles used to go like this, and now they go like this, because then they go under the radar. So, this is an analogy. How the method of delivery may be different. So, what was his... And also we find the different acharyas, apart from that, they all make some... On many of them, they make a specific theological contribution. They reveal things which are not in the present yuga being revealed. They reveal truth. It's Rishi, the original meaning of this word, is mantra drasha. He sees certain mantras of the Vedas. He sees they're there, the return of truth, but they're not always revealed in human society. Now, Rishis, those mantras become manifest within their consciousness, and they reveal that to their disciples. And in this way it becomes manifest in the world. So often acharyas, they make some, many of them, especially the prominent ones, they make some specific theological contributions, some of which are about to discuss us from these theological contributions. I've mentioned a few of them in this lecture. And there are others also, just like he explained for the first time in contravention to the normal calming misunderstanding why Yudhishthira's chariot, Yudhishthira Maharaj's chariot, came down to the ground after the incident of him announcing that Ashwatthama is dead. So that was discussed in some detail the other night. There are other ones, participants, as why Nityananda Prabhu broke the sannyas rod of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His explanation, I've written in my book, the theological contributions, so participants, as well as theological contributions. Taddebhavan, he wrote a short essay called Taddebhavan, in which he these words from the beginning of Kena Upanishad, he analyzed them to indicate Vrindavan, which other acharyas said also wrong, but then Tadram is a specific construction which is unique to this Upanishadic statement. So, what is his specialty as an acharya? I want to discuss a little bit about that. There are so many things. His style, he's very style of delivery. He's very well known for this Rupanuga Viruddha Apasidanta Dvantaha. He's known as he who removed the darkness of ignorance of the wrong conclusions concerning the propagated by the followers of Rupa Goswami. So that's about his theological contribution, so many that you can read about himself. In how he analyzed, for instance, the upper sampradayas, or the cheating sampradayas to be, what is the nature of their cheating? So, for instance, you may hear a lot of that, how he analyzed, for instance, the Gaura Nagari upper sampradaya to be one thing he called the Nirvisheshvadis, which we normally call Nirvisheshvadi, one who says there's no specialty in he has no characteristics. But he gave a completely different understanding to the word Nirvishesh in this he gave a different contextual understanding in relation to Gaura Nagaris, because he said that the Visheshta, or the specialty of Gaura Lila and that of Krishna Lila is different. In Krishna Lila, the specialty is that Krishna is the enjoyer of the Vraja Gopis. And the specialty of Gaura Lila is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken the mood of a Vraja Gopi. So to say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Gaura Nagari Vadis, they say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is enjoying the young women of Nadia. So in this way they obliterate the difference. They say there's no difference in the specialty of Krishna and Gaura, and in this way the Nirvisheshvadi. He found so many other faults also. This came in a series of essays in the Gaurian, the magazine of the Gaurian. What happened, the editor of the main Gauranga Nagari magazine visited Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, came to visit him. So he's like the main spokesman, or at least in many ways the main spokesman. Even if he doesn't invent the philosophy himself, he broadcasts it. Hari Padma Goswami or something, I can't remember. So he came to visit Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who probably cut his philosophy into pieces and put all on his own borders. So in the next edition of the, I believe it was Sri, anyway, in their magazine, this editor, he wrote in the next edition that on such and such a date it was my great fortune to have the darshan of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati at his mat in Uttadhamma Road in Calcutta. And even though we have different outlooks on the culture of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, still we have to appreciate the great work he's done in spreading the culture of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in response, in the next five or six issues of the Gaudiya magazine, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura had printed long essays totally smashing Gauranga Bhagavad. He didn't want to be known. Oh yes, you appreciate us. Okay, we appreciate you. No way. Nothing like that at all. You can appreciate it. You don't have to appreciate us. And this is why you're wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. In this way that he gave so many different reasons. One of them is the negotiation. In great detail. So that's why that he's known for that contribution. That, oh, I should, this very, he's very harsh and harsh and he himself said that when someone wrote a letter, some article had come. Actually, many times in the magazine, the Gaudiya, his essays, they wouldn't be signed. It was written by him. And to date, we're not sure who wrote them, himself or someone else. But anyway, it's all his. All the ideas are coming from him. And it's all his. The Gaudiya is, the letters written there is coming from him. And there are a few mistakes here. Basically, it's all coming from him. So one letter, someone had apparently written him a letter asking that, are you the editor of this article? Why is it so harsh? Why is it so hard? The word hard in English can mean literally solid like that, it's very hard, or you could say rough. It can mean harsh also. You said it's a very hard person. It means he speaks very harshly, deals with people roughly. And it also means difficult. His language is hard. We could say about this answer, but his language is hard. It means he's difficult to understand. So there's the Sanskrit come Bengali word kotor. Kotor. Which means in the same sense, it can mean harsh and it can mean difficult to, just like difficult to understand also. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wrote him a letter saying that you are correct in surmising who, or in guessing, you could say, who is the author of the essay called Dusanga. And you are right that his language is hard. So you should also make your language hard. As this person was saying, you should soften up a bit. So you should also...
Let me get it right here. How did I spell control? Yeah. Okay, here we are. Yeah. So here's the quote, as I've written it. Translated from his harsh language in Bengali. He whom you have guessed to be the author of articles other than Dusanga in Sajjana Toshani did indeed personally write them. His language, is it hard? His language, he says, it is eternally hard. Let's get that. His language is eternally hard. Consummate the lack of such hardness in your own charming linguistic style and in this way effect actual benefit for human society. In other words, he's saying because your style is very nice and it's not hard, you cannot, by those, that style, you cannot do any actual benefit for human society. You also become hard, he told him. You're a very good, flowery writer. You also become hard, and then you can actually benefit people. By repeated study of such articles, you will also cultivate such a disposition, and then see how such hard language is converted into soft. It's actually very sweet. Rishimhadev is very sweet. Who thinks that? Hiranyakashipu doesn't think that. Prahlad thinks that. When he sees Hiranyakashipu ripping the guts out of Hiranyakashipu, who's superficially Prahlad's father, when he sees that and sees Rishimhadev so angry with the intestines of Hiranyakashipu around his leg, dripping blood and stool, and Prahlad says, very sweet. So you have to be devoted to appreciate the sweetness of Acharya Kesari. This was the term his disciples used, which means lion rule, which has been translated in ISKCON as Singha rule. It's been translated back wrongly. But the actual term used was Acharya Kesari. And Acharya meant the lion. So that was just a tangent talking about what is his bhakti siddhanta. You're talking about the style is very hard. Well, yeah. There's that one verse. Chinna. Yeah, here's a verse by Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, one of his disciples, who I was saying would explain his lectures. Summarizing Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's presentation. It's Nikila Bhuvana Maya Chinna Vichinna Kartri Vibuddha Bahulam Rigya Mukti Mohanta Datri Shithilita Vidhi Radha Radha Radhe Shadhani Vilasatu Hridi Nityam Bhakti Siddhanta Vani. The translation is also derived from Sridhar Maharaj, who explained it more in the translation. With his first step, he cut to pieces the entire plane of exploitation. That was the first thing he did. So all this smashing the upper sampradaya, that's just the first step. And with his second, he crushed the speculation of scholars of salvation and liberation. With his third, he softened Vaidhi Bhakti with a touch of divine love, Raga Marga. Taking us beyond Vaikuntha, he has introduced us to the highest worship of Sri Sri Radha Govinda. With the softness of Vrindavan within and the hardness of a devastator without, just like we said, Nrsimhadev, very hard. But why is he apparently so hard? Because his heart is soft with love of Prahlad. So with the softness of Vrindavan within and the hardness of a devastator without, he created havoc in the world by fighting with one and all, single-handedly battling against the whole world and cutting everything to pieces was his external feature. His second attitude was to stop the boasting research of scholars and doctors of different schools of thought. And third, to minimize and slacken the grandeur of the worship of Narayana and establish service to Radha Govinda as the topmost attainment. He caused the domain of love to descend into this plane with service to Radha Govinda, establishing that the flow of divine love from the heart is all in all. That was his history, the real existence of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada. May his divine teachings, Bhakti Siddhanta Vani, dance eternally within the core of our hearts. Hridi Vilasatu, what is it? Vilasatu Hridi Nityam Bhakti Siddhanta Vani. So that's a summary, so how did he present all this? Well, or what's the essence of that? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself said, once while he was dictating material for his biography to one of his disciples, big history, what happened to all of that? Well, it got thrown in the Charni River in Nadia district, pages and pages, as big as the Mahabharata, which is estimated to be. Notes, so many things, because I don't know if you have taken off. So many, most of his lectures, and even just his informal streams, all jotted down in the notes for his biography, or written black, thrown in there. That's another big history, if anyone wants to investigate that, the history of the Gauriya map after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So it's not for no reason that there was some bad feeling. They weren't just fighting over properties. There was also some severe Vaishnava Parambi. On both sides accused each other of Vaishnava Parambi. One side said the Vaishnava Parambi has not been seen in the history of the world. They themselves. So anyway, as he was dictating for his biography, he was giving notes, giving dictation, and it's written down in shorthand. So he said that drishyabhicha, this is the essence of everything I have spoken, everything I have to speak. This is the everything else I say is on the basis of this. This is the cornerstone. Means understanding vision. Who is the, basically we can say the seer and the seen. Who is seeing and who is to be seen? So just like people think, I want to see God, the whole understanding, we are to be seen by Him. So this is the basis. This is a long section in my book. So examples. So that's the basis of everything He taught. Who is the seer and who is the seen? We have to see that we are not the seer. We are to be seen. As Prabhupada often quoted his own Guru Maharaj, do not try to see God, try to act in such a way that He will want to see you. Anyway, He's seen. If He doesn't want to see you, forgetting Him. So act in such a way that He will want to see you. Don't say, show me God, but serve. In other words, we're the service. He always emphasizes this. Service. We try to serve Him, and then He will be happy to see us. Now, if you want to say philosophically, what is the essence of his saying? Just, okay, let's hypothesize or confabulate, pretend, that's an easy word. Let's pretend that we're going to write well, there are books written like that, the lives of philosophers. So, they give the lives of the philosophers and their teachings and all together. So, what was philosophically? What is his stance? What is his stand? What is his attitude? We would say that Jivasura Koi Krishna Nitya Das. The Jiva is the servant of Krishna.
That's true. But that's no. This. We have to go deeper. Deeper? Is there anything deeper than that? Philosophically speaking. Why so? Why this? I see, and anyone can see if they have even caught a religious see, that his whole stance was presenting the truth. He was an enemy of untruth. He wanted the truth. He hated falsity. He hated misrepresentation of truth. Falsity that can be a mistake, just an unintentional mistake. Actually, the falsity of mind is never unintentional, but misrepresentation of the truth. Our own Shiva, same thing. When somebody comes, professor and Prabhupada, professor, what subject do you teach? Hinduism. What do you mean by Hinduism? His so-called clever reply of the professor, I don't know. And Prabhupada said, then you are a cheater. Because you're professing to teach what you do not know. So, especially those who are professors, to profess means to teach or to preach. Those who are professors are non-true. Those who make it their business to go around in the world and teach something which is false. If you just have a wrong idea, that's one thing. But if you take that wrong idea and take it door to door and preach it, then you are an enemy of truth. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was an enemy of untruth, and he was an enemy of the professors of untruth. He was their best friend. He was the best friend of everyone. Vaishnava is the best friend of everyone, but the best, Vaishnava is the servant of everyone. But to best serve the professors of untruth, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took the apparent position of their enemy. He hated untruth. And he always spoke against it. He didn't tolerate untruth. When he was a child, a youth, you can say, at school, we were visiting one of their professors, one person whose name is still famous among Bengalis. This has gone back to the about 100 years ago. Actually, over 100 years ago. This, not famous with me. Panchanan something. So anyway, he was famous as a scholar, particularly as a scholar. Scholars
and even now, big scholars, even in this age, someone like this Abdul Kalam, he was famous before he became the president of India, he was famous as not just a scholar, practical scientist also. And some scholars are the world famous, Stephen Hawking, the modern age. Scholars, they get positions like they get advisor to the president in America. So, of course, they're not exactly what we would call a pundit. They're wrongly. Anyway, of course, Einstein was voted in Time magazine as the most important person of the 20th century. Even above Hitler, who seemed to be. Anyway, they were visiting. As a youth, he was visiting this man. He was a colossal statue. He
So Bhaktisthan Saraswati was visiting his home, and the topics turned to religious topics, as they often were among Indians. I used to see, even 25 or 30 years ago, that just among Indians that turned to such topics. What we call religion was a major part of Indian culture to an extent that it's topics of conversation. Still, it's a major part of Indian culture, but not in that way. So anyway, when the topic turned to the subject of religion and God, then this Panchami, Vidyabhushan, Tarkabhushan, they have all these long titles. So, Chattopadhyayani. Anyway, he said, well, you see, my friends, that I wouldn't want to limit God by saying there's any specific name or form of Him. I'd rather not discuss these things, because if I'm wrong, then after death He may take issue with me. He might be upset about it. So it's better, he was advising them, the old scholar advising them, better don't discuss these things, because you can't really understand anything about it, so better don't discuss it, and that way we won't make any offense. It doesn't sound like a very good proposition. So, explain the exact quote, get it right. Ishvara Chandra Vidyasaga. Pandit Ishvara Chandra Vidyasaga. That's why I couldn't remember his name, because his actual name is not there. It's just his title. His first name and his title. You see, my friends, when I have no actual experience of Godhead or His real self, then even taking it for granted that He exists, if I give any account of Him but He proves to be unlike what I say in all sincerity, then certainly I risk being taken to task by Him after death. For that reason, I don't like to discuss about Bhagavan. For that reason, you see, because I'm sincere, what I say in all sincerity. Because I'm sincere, I don't like to discuss about Bhagavan, but I teach only conventional moral instructions that I can understand in the Bible. Sorry, I won't speak on very high things which we can't understand. I'm going to speak some moral instructions. Very sincere.
So Siddhanta Saraswati retorted, why then did you write in your book, Bodhodara, Ishvara Niraka Chaitanya Swarup? The Supreme Lord is composed of consciousness and is formless. Did you write this after actually seeing Him? Or did you merely rely on stereotype doctrines? Cotton.
You say you don't like to talk about it, but you have talked in your book, and you made a statement that he has no consciousness, he's formless. So he's just a young boy challenged. In the field of in his youth, I'm speaking, I guess, today mostly for those who already know his life story. I didn't speak about what we could call his life story. That's also morphology. He went here, he went there, he did this, he got that title, he met someone. This is not a biography. A biography is what should have been. There's nothing in it. So, mostly biographies are like that. He went there, he met such and such, he did this, he opened that. So this lecture today is mostly for those who already, at least, they know the story. So behind the story. So in his youth, he was brilliant in astronomy. And but what was he doing? He was fighting all the astronomers. He attained prominence by fighting. That's what Prabhupada said also in Krishna said in the beginning. Krishna, we have just lived in Vrindavan, we would have cared. He attained prominence by fighting and killing the demons. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he couldn't tolerate that in the name of the Jyoti Shastra, all these people who have all big titles, Jyotish, Tirtha, they're just talking all rubbish. They don't understand anything about it. They only read the books and they call themselves Jyotish, Tirtha. They have some big title. They just read, someone made summarizing all into notes and they cram that and they regurgitate it all, everything all wrong. And people think they're right because no one knows what they're talking about. So in a society of fools, the biggest fool seems to be the most intelligent. It's just like Prabhupada said. The aphrodilius of the penultimate formless cuckle, probably somebody who talks like some words, sounds like some words, but doesn't really mean anything. And people say, oh, no, very intelligent, very learned. They can't understand what he's saying. It doesn't mean anything. But foolish people think, oh, yes, he's a great scholar. They don't understand anything he says. They come out with a lecture. Brilliant lecture. Wonderful lecture. Yeah, it was brilliant. And then you ask, what did he say? Well, I don't know what he said, but it was a brilliant lecture. Obviously, it was brilliant. All those long words. Like that, the astronomers, they got it all wrong. They're using the astronomical constants, which are centuries out of date. Not understanding, they think, you see, it's written in the books, so it must be right. But it's not right, because the astronomical constants are not constant. So he was fighting with them all, and from the very beginning, he was just fighting. And even in his youth, and then after initiation, he gave up this. Around that time, he gave. Well, Gorky Shodas Bhavji Maharaj told him to just preach the absolute truth, leaving aside all other things. So he left aside astronomy. People often say he was an astrologer, but he wasn't so much an astrologer as an astronomer. The word is the same sense of Jyotish. But he wasn't so much concerned with making charts for people's marriages. He knew a lot of things. He was more concerned with the technical aspects of the science. So even in his youth, he came to Puri with Bhaktivinoda Thakur in 1901. And in Puri, this Nitai Gaur Radhe Sham Prasadita was prominent. He was fighting, very prominent and popular, and respected. He was fighting with them. He would grab people. He was so upset with this. Everybody was so upset with this. He'd catch people and say, you know this Nitai Gaur Radhe. It's bogus. He was fighting with them. And it became such a hot issue that these people, they wanted to kill him. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I'll go to my and then again, he came out and he did his Shatahuti Nabjaka. He came out and he wanted to. And again, he was fighting with Kashin Gazan, the second one was held in Kumilai. So he was again, he was fighting Oh, there's so many. In Baligai,
he
represented Bhaktivinoda Thakur to establish the
Brahmanas.
Vaishnava is a true Brahman. So it's fighting. Why? Was he just belligerent and nasty? Will you find in his chart that he's just some kind of nasty person or small? So they say his genes are not properly, his hormones are not properly adjusted, and because he could not tolerate untruth. He wanted to blast it out of human society. He wanted to destroy untruth. But where is untruth? Everywhere. The untruth, especially the upper Siddhanta or the wrong understanding. How many wrong understandings are there? How many people are there in the world? 6 billion? There's at least 6 billion misunderstandings. Everyone has many. So there's billions of misunderstandings. And we group them into categories. So every moment, everyone's producing some new misunderstanding. So he would find the essence. Find the essence of the misunderstanding. And he would attack certain specific misunderstandings that were misleading people. Actually, in one sense, these wrong philosophies, they don't mislead people. It's just like, does Maya mislead us, or rather we embrace Maya? She provides the stool and we smear it all over ourselves, you could say. That she, you say we're captured by Maya, rather we have captured Maya. So to convince people that this philosophy, don't catch it, because otherwise it will not be for your benefit. This is Amanda Dayada, non-malefic mercy. The best manifestation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's non-malefic mercy is to disabuse people. You know that word, disabuse? I said it the other day. It means nothing to do with abuse. It means to remove people, remove people's misconceptions. To state the actual truth is the best mercy. Although people take it another way, because they think that they pray for God's mercy. What is God's mercy? Dhanjan Sundari, Pratishtha, all these things. Money, wealth, followers, women, prestige. He was against all the cut. He was against untruth. He wanted to establish the truth. Krishna is the supreme truth. He was most intolerant of untruth. So we can sing that Guru Dev Kripa Bindu Deva. Karanana Hoyle Kandiya Kandiya Prana Raki Bhavan. This Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said when he was refused initiation by Gaurakishadas Babaji Maharaj. He said, if you don't give me your mercy, I won't be able to maintain my home. So out of this came the myth that he threatened to commit suicide. Generally believed in this. Someone imagined that. There's no authoritative record that said, if you don't give me initiation, he went in the middle of the river and stood on the bridge and said, if I can jump in and drown myself. So when you're translating this, when you get down to it, this song, it says this devotee, but there's not in the original song. In the translations, in the English, it says this devotee, but a devotee doesn't call himself a devotee. It's not in the original So you can make a note of that if you want, but whenever you get around, he told me he wanted to translate the song.
In this song, he says something that this devotee.
But it doesn't say that it's not in the original, in someone's Himalaya.
Well, I first became a devotee 30 years ago.
How long have you been a devotee in the town? So, still trying.
Who thinks they're a devotee? Whoever thinks they're a devotee, in the words of Bhakti Sanskrit, they are a branded Vaishnava. He uses that term. Branded. To understand exactly who this animal belongs to. So you belong in the class of non-devotees. If you think I'm a devotee, then that is the very sign that you're not a devotee. So, are there any questions? I guess I could take another 10 minutes. And then we'll have a little break. And then there'll be the bowl offering, which we can also, during that, as he also instituted in his maps, we can sing the Bhogarati song, which is called. And then after that, there'll be Pushpanjali. Yeah. Any questions, comments, anything else? Hey, guess what? Are you going to translate this book into Tamil? Big job, huh? A lot of work to do. First, you have to learn English. Yeah.
You always spoke something about it, but I want to know more. Why Bhakti Sanskrit Thakur use such a language, such a way of teaching? It should be more like Srila Prabhupada used very simple and explained it.
One thing is, it is his, as he said himself, it's his eternal teaching. He thinks like that, and we tend to speak as we think. His own level is like that. Another reason was it was very much required for his mission, because people thought that Vaishnavas were just illiterate fools, uneducated people with no philosophy or no such thing. So he spoke in such a way that the scholars got lost. They had to admit there was a level of scholarship that just left them. They were thinking they were big scholars, and they were just left. They were thinking they were Einsteins, and then they realized they were like little children. Scholarship. His level of scholarship was just so far surpassed them. So that we can say, he said himself that. That when moving among the materialistic people, we should be more learned than them, dress better than them, a little bit. Let me see if I can find that quote. I have to remember some key word. Anyway, that's the gist of it. Anyway, I didn't find that. Anyway, here's a good one. It's nothing to do with your. I was looking for a little more scholarly, but it's not. That's not the word. Here's a quote from Saraswati Jayashree. biographical work which was published in his own during his manifest appearance. To Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples, several individuals proffered what they considered well-intentioned suggestions for improving his performance. Here's some suggestion how he could be a better preacher. If he would just be a little more sensitive to public opinion and more positive in his outlook, if he would look for the good in others and not grouse so much, and not be so insistent on always speaking the straight facts, then surely today no other religious leaders would have as many supporters as he. If he did not forbid all kinds of intoxicants, then right now thousands would surrender to him. He could have been tremendously successful by adjusting to smarter practices and not introducing new ideas about Brahminism. If he had at least orally endorsed groups, that he instead chose to berate the gurus thereof and their unlimited followers would have submitted to him as their universal head. He just made a little compromise and everyone would have followed him. He didn't want that kind of following. He said, at the expense of all my monks and all my everything, if I can convert one person into a pure devotee of Krishna, I'd be satisfied. I would consider it worth all the effort. So there was at least one. And we're grateful for that. We have unlimited debt to him. Kirtir yasya sajivati. Prabhupada quoted about himself. One is famous, lives. So today is the disappearance, but he hasn't disappeared. You know, it's only from our vision that he disappears. But we should cause, well, Prabhupada caused his appearance within the world. Prabhupada brought Bhaktisiddhanta all over the world. So by taking these books door to door, house to house, train to train, bringing Bhaktisiddhanta to the world. So we should work to let people know what is this Bhaktisiddhanta. People should know and can appreciate. People should appreciate. They appreciate all the wrong people because they are all the wrong outlook. If they can appreciate bhakti, then they will appreciate what is bhakti siddhanta. So it's the job of the disciples to glorify the guru.